Good day, and welcome to the Instone Real Estate Group AG HY 2020 Results Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Borka Sabasic, Head of Investor Relations. Sir, please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining our H1 conference call. You have also seen the news from last night as another major topic for today. Our management team, represented by our CEO, Kruno Sepulja, and our CFO, Furwa Majlessi, will walk you through our presentation to give you an update on our business and our growth strategy going forward. As usual, this will be followed by a Q&A session. With this, I'll hand over to Kruno Sepulja.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. I'm glad you could join us to our Q2 earnings call. Today is an eventful day for us. We are not only presenting our results and our business outlook, but we are also preparing for a step change in our growth strategy with our first equity raising since our IPO. The second quarter was, of course, anything but a normal quarter with the impact from the COVID-19 pandemic. We all experienced that the world has changed with such an extreme event. From an economic or investment standpoint, clear that German residential as an asset class is a relative winner. Also, during this recessionary period, German residential has once again proven to be highly resilient, and residential property prices continue to move up. Our business at Instone definitely saw a noticeable temporary sales decline due to the pandemic. But we have also witnessed a subsequent strong rebound of our sales activities. This recent development also provides very good reasons for optimism that Instone will be a key beneficiary of this structural trend of sustained high demand for German residential real estate assets. So let me first of all start our presentation with an overview of the recent developments. As mentioned, we have seen a severe short-term impact on our sales with the breakout of the COVID-19 pandemic, and therefore we have also decided to postpone the marketing of new projects. However, since mid of May, we have seen a steady reshaped recovery of our sales. Meanwhile, our sales have now fully normalized. They have reached the strong pre-crisis levels again. This also holds true for institutional business, where we, after temporary, have received strong indications of interest. Especially for institutional investors, German residential has gained further relative attractiveness also vis-a-vis other real estate subsectors. Nevertheless, we will not be able to catch up the temporary revenues losses this year, which will have a short-term impact on our 2020 results. I'll come back to this in a minute. Part of the continued normalization is also the restart of our acquisition activities. We have exercised a purchase option on two projects with a GDV of around 190 million. We have started construction of three projects with a GDV of 235 million and launched the marketing of one project with a GDV of 36 million. On top, we have several projects in a pre-marketing phase. Also on the financing side, we strengthened our business profile recently. We successfully refinanced a term loan provided by Deutsche Bank with a coupon of 5% by 100 million promissory note at favorable terms of 4%, and therefore we have further reduced our funding costs. This underscores our low cost of capital also in relation to other listed peers. So let me briefly give you an overview of the development of our financial KPIs, which were heavily affected by the pandemic in Q2 after we had a good start to the year in the first quarter. Despite the decline in Q2, our revenue still showed a moderate increase of plus 3% in H1 compared to first half of 2019. Our gross margin stayed at a very high level of more than 32%, reflecting the quality of our project portfolio as well as the execution capabilities of the Instone platform. Our adjusted EBIT decreased in H1 to 28.2 year-on-year due to temporary loss of revenues and investments into our platform, i.e. into planned future growth. While our tax rate in 2019 benefited from a positive one-time effect due to the first-time recognition of a tax loss carried forward, we saw the expected return to a normalized rate in current fiscal year. This resulted in an expected stronger decline in the adjusted earnings after tax. Coming to our outlook, fiscal year 2020 will be a transitional year. The compelling secular growth trend for our business will be overshadowed by the short-term distortions from the pandemic, as we lost roughly a quarter of annual revenues. We reinstate our 2020 guidance with an adjusted revenue target of $5 million and a target for adjusted earnings after tax of $30 million to $35 million. We feel very comfortable regarding our 2021 growth targets. Accordingly, we reiterate our revenue guidance of $900 million to $1 billion, as well as our earnings guidance of at least $90 million of adjusted earnings after tax. Also, our plan to distribute 30% of adjusted earnings as dividend starting with fiscal year 2020 remains unchanged. By launching our Value Home product, we have added a second pillar to our business. We believe that Instone's business model offers huge growth potential going forward. Therefore, we decided to raise equity to fund the step change in medium to long-term growth and to take advantage of our excellent competitive position. On the next slide, number 7, you find an overview chart with the terms of the imminent, fully underwritten transaction. We are going to raise $170 million of equity at a subscription price of €18.20 per share. This corresponds to a standard discount to the theoretical ex-rights price, TERP, of 23.1%. The subscription ratio is 4 new shares for 15 old shares, hence we are increasing our capital by 27%. We provide an overview for this capital markets transaction. We strongly believe that now is the right time to raise fresh equity, as there is an excellent window of opportunity for an acceleration of our growth strategy. The proceeds from the capital increase will give us the financial firepower to invest into incremental projects with a GDV of at least $1.5 billion. This allows us to raise our sustainable medium-term revenue target to $1.6 to $1.7 billion annually. We actually see two strong factors supporting our view. First of all, we see that there is a window opening up with a temporary opportunity to benefit from increased land supply and a less intense competition. There is this freezing competition that is driven by the current absence of highly leveraged players, predominantly relying on mezzanine capital. On the supply side, you can expect a positive impact from the conversion of the one or other commercial development project into a resi project due to economic downturn, reinforced also by structural headwinds. Overall, we are currently observing largely stable land prices, and we expect them to remain rather stable for some time. With an unchanged positive outlook for medium-term price inflation, the current situation forms a great basis to generate excess returns above our internal IRR and margin targets in the years to come. After we put acquisitions on hold due to the crisis, we bought our first two projects at the end of Q2. One of these projects, we were even able to renegotiate the previously agreed price to a lower, providing evidence for our thesis. The second very good reason, our view, to raise equity is a planned rollout of the Value Home product. On the basis of a standardized, highly scalable product, we are entering a new market segment, the mid-market segment. This market is completely undersupplied, and there's huge growth potential for us with our innovative product. We as Instone have a substantial competitive advantage, which we are going to exploit in the coming years. On slide 11, we provide additional information regarding the use of proceeds and the impact on our growth outlook. While maintaining a strict capital discipline, we believe that we can spend the money within the next 6 to 18 months, at least in line or even above to our clearly defined investment criteria. We are striving for margin targets of and IRR targets of 20% and 25% for our traditional and our new Value Home product, respectively. We have already secured a pretty high visibility with identified projects with a total volume of some 4.3 billion of GDV. Thereof, a volume of around 1.3 billion has reached a more advanced stage. This comprises either a successful negotiation of the term sheets or an approval of the management. Projects with a volume of 115 million have even reached an agreement with the management approval. The funds allow us to raise our medium sustainable annual adjusted revenue target to a level of 1.6 billion to 1.7 billion euro. This is up by 60 to 70% from the steady state level we have discussed with you at the time of the IPO. The table on slide 12 provides you with a more detailed breakdown of our current project pipeline with a total volume of some 4.3 billion. As mentioned, for around 115 million, we are close to signing. The potential projects are spread over our 8 regional branches. A high share of this pipeline is designated for a new value home product. Of the total pipeline volume, there's maybe a 50-50 split between our new and our traditional core product. On the following slide, we illustrate the mechanism of how the net proceeds 25 million from the capital might translate into a future growth potential. With 175 million of equity and at a loan to cost ratio of 40 to 50%, we are going to acquire plots of land over the next 6 to 18 months worth more than 300 million. As a rule of thumb, the value of the land on average corresponds to some 20% of the GDV. Accordingly, you can calculate that the equity injection eventually translates into an incremental GDV of more than 1.5 billion, which we are going to realize over a period of a few years. The residential product we are offering to the market enjoys very strong demand. An end of this structural positive trend is currently not in sight. During the current COVID crisis, this asset class gained further relative attractiveness, especially related to other real estate subsegments such as retail, hotel, and also office facing structural headwinds. The strong resilience of residential prices during the pandemic is no longer only a general market observation, but it has now also been confirmed by all relevant data providers and surveys. You find a summary of the recently published market data on chart 12. They all point into the same direction, that property prices, also during the second quarter, remain at least stable, or they moved up, an exceptionally strong result during a recessionary period. An important factor contributing to this is the fact that the financing environment stays very supportive. So far, there has been hardly any negative impact on mortgage rates or the availability of loans. Mortgage rates remain nearly at all-time lows and at significantly below 1% for 10-year loans for most private investors. Hence, affordability remains high. On slide 16, we provide an update of our current project portfolio. There are no material changes. Instone's unique position in the German development market is reflected in a diversified nationwide pipeline of 5.7 billion, corresponding to more than 13,000 residential units, mostly spread across the attractive German ACDs. After the reporting date, the portfolio GDV further slightly increased to some 5.8 billion. You are also familiar with the chart on slide 16 on the right-hand side. We currently have around 2.3 billion of GDV, either under or pre-construction, and thereof some 87% or 2 billion have already been sold, providing a high earnings visibility for the coming years. With that, I would like to hand over to Foruha for the financials.
Thank you, Kruno, and good morning, everyone. Let's go right into our Q2 results of operations on page 18. While our Q2 revenues of 80 million fell short of our original expectation, as well as previous year's Q2 figure, Against the backdrop of the COVID-19 pandemic and associated lockdowns, we are satisfied with the results. In particular, we feel very good about our ability to achieve a Q2 gross margin in excess of 35%, exceeding previous year's strong figure. The result is indicative of the quality of our projects as well as our ability to maintain pricing at pre-corona levels for all our projects. As we had always anticipated, the second half of this year will come in at lower margins. For the full year, our expectation is a gross margin of 28%+. This is above our 27% at the top, but in line with our previous statements that lower revenues than originally anticipated will lead to margins at or above the top end of our initial guidance. Platform costs, the moderate increase to 29.9 million for the first half of 2020 primarily reflects the continued build-up of our platform with an increase in FTEs from 267 to 323 over the last 12 months. Over the course of fiscal years 2018 and 2019, we have rapidly increased profitability as well as investments into new projects. The financial results line for the first half of 2020 reflects these investments and the resulting increase of our gross debt and interest expenses. Finally, as you know, in fiscal year 2019, we did benefit from the first-time recognition of tax loss carryforwards with a favorable corresponding IFRS tax rate. The 26.2% adjusted IFRS tax rate for H1 2020 reflects a more normalized tax rate for our business. We expect the full-year tax rate to amount to around 30%. On page 19, you can see the development of our customer sales contracts. The amount of concluded customer sales contracts are a key driver of our revenues. Q2 2020 sales contracts amounted to 54 million, a decline of more than 21% versus our Q1 2019 sales. Again, this is a reflection of, one, a temporary but severe reduction in our sales to retail customers as evidenced in our sales ratio, trough of 0.5%. Second, our decision to postpone a number of marketing launches at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. Third, the temporary hold of negotiations and resulting delay in completions of institutional sales. In the meantime, we have witnessed a complete normalization regarding all of these temporary impediments. Hence, we do expect the second half of fiscal year 2020 to result in a much higher customer sales figure than H1. In fact, our guidance for total concluded sales contracts in fiscal year 2020 amounts to at least 450 million euros. The substantial increase in sales is driven by, one, the normalization of our retail sales ratio, second, incremental retail sales from 3 to 4 new H2 project launches, and third, substantially increased institutional sales, where we see good progress in negotiating a number of potential sales. In summary, current trading is strong, institutional sales are in concrete discussion, and visibility is clearly normalized. I will come to our reinstated 2020 financial targets in a bit, but the above provides a high level of confidence in the relevant revenue and profit forecast. Over the page, we show our loan-to-cost and leverage ratio as of 30th June, as well as pro forma. The pro forma column shows the impact of, first, the 170 million net proceeds from the rights issue, and second, the refinancing of our term loan with a new 100 million five-year promissory note. With profitability temporarily impacted by COVID-19, our focus in monitoring leverage is on loan to cost, which we consider to be prudent both pre the equity raise as well as pro forma for the capital increase. In the context of our LTC ratio, please note that our inventories are recognized at cost and there is a substantial gap between the balance sheet figure and relevant fair values. Going forward and post-investment of the rights issue proceeds, we are targeting net debt to EBITDA broadly around 3 times and LTC of around 45%. Page 21 provides an overview of our project level and corporate level debt maturity schedule. By definition, project level finance is typically short term. Our corporate level weighted debt maturities are in excess of 3 years. highlight our latest corporate level refinancing success. With a new 100 million 5-year promissory note, we have repaid a 5% liability with a 4% instrument, substantially termed out our debt maturities, and further diversified our debt investor base, as we have now, for the first time, accessed a group of German pension funds. Our corporate level interest cost, excluding commitment fees payable on undrawn facility, has now been reduced to just above 3%. Our effective project level funding costs are more expensive and include bonding and guarantee costs. As a result, we do expect our overall cost of debt going forward to come out at around 4.5% as opposed to our previous guidance of 4.5% to 5%. Turning to page 22, our H1 operating cash flow amounts to negative 37.8 million. However, adjusting for land investments of 50 million, our H1 cash flow comes out at plus 12.5 million. I would like to reiterate that even after new project investments, we do expect a positive operating cash flow for the full year. In fact, we expect substantial milestone payments based on already concluded customer contracts with both retail as well as, in particular, institutional customers. These payments are, however, geared towards year-end and will mostly accrue in the fourth quarter. In addition, recovering new retail sales will provide for incremental cash inflows, in particular in relation to those projects where construction is well progressed. As we embark on our new investment program and put the proceeds from the capital raise to work over the next 6 to 18 months, we do expect operating cash flow to be negative for fiscal year 21 as well as for fiscal year 22. Page 23 provides an overview of our liquidity position both on an actual as well as pro forma basis, taking into account 170 million net proceeds from the rights issue as well as our 100 million debt refinancing. Our strong corporate and project level liquidity has obviously further improved on a pro forma basis. I would like to stress once again that our growth plans are fully funded and no further equity will be required to achieve our announced midterm revenue target of 1.6 to 1.7 billion euros. Over the page, we show our prospective NAV both on an actual as well as pro forma basis per share. Please note that the pro forma figure is based on the capital raising but pre any investment of the proceeds. On that basis, the capital raising would be slightly dilutive to NAV on a per-share basis. However, we have also added a column for illustrative purposes to show the NAV figure, assuming investments in new land plots with 1.5 billion GDV. On that basis, and assuming incremental expected project expenses equivalent to 60% of the GDV of these new land plots, we clearly expect the capital raise to be accretive to our NAV per share. The illustrative calculation points to an NAV per share post-investment of 39 euros. As a reminder, our prospective NAV is the NAV our company would show, assuming all our projects would be developed to hold. Turning to page 26, and as Kuna has already pointed out, we are reinstating our profit forecast for fiscal year 2020. We expect to achieve 2020 adjusted revenues of 470 to 500 million with a gross margin of at least 28%. This will translate into adjusted 5 million euros. Our expected volume of customer sales contracts amounts to at least 450 million. Our guidance for 2021 and beyond remains unchanged. In particular, we remain highly confident to achieving a 2021 adjusted earnings after tax figure of at least 90 million euros. Please also note, as previously communicated, all our revenue targets for 2020, 2021, and 2022 are covered based on existing projects. Also, for 2020 and 2021, 78% and 31% of revenues are covered based on already concluded sales contracts, assuming continued construction progress as planned. Finally, we remain fully committed to paying a first-time dividend of 30% of our adjusted earnings by fiscal year 2020 to be paid out in 2021. We also anticipate to maintain our 30% payout ratio for the subsequent years, as we feel absolutely confident in our ability to deliver continued attractive growth and return cash to shareholders. With that, I would hand it over to Burkhard.
With that, we would like to kick off the Q&A session. Sorry.
Thank you, sir. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star one to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone the opportunity to signal for questions. Our first question will come from Bart Gysens with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Bart, hi.
Hi. Thank you for providing that new midterm guidance of $1.6-$1.7 billion. That's very useful. But can I just check, how do you define midterm? Is that in 3 years' time, in 5 years' time, in 7 years' time? And secondly, when on page 24, when you provide an illustrative post-investment scenario, the net debt that you show there of $672 million, is that what the net debt you expect to be at when you are at your run rate of $1.6-$1.7 billion of revenues? Because I think then it's helpful to say, okay, if you make that type of revenue and if you apply a certain EBIT margin to that, then we have an idea about what your debt cost will be, and therefore we can have a proper understanding what the bottom line economics will be. So that's my two questions. Thank you.
Okay, on your first questions, Bart, we think that we can achieve our target range by 2025, 26 at the latest. So midterm for us, I think, is within 5 years from now. On the pro forma or illustrative calculation, we are starting off the Q2 debt figure and assume that we're investing in an incremental €309 million into GDV projects worth €1.5 billion. If we were to look forward to 2025, I would expect that that our net debt figure would be quite a bit lower as we generate cash flows on the way to 2025.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Pascal Boll with MainFirst.
Yes, good morning from my side. I have a question. At your capital markets day, you estimated the additional sales revenue of $400 million by 2025. Now you issued a new guidance of $1.6 to $1.7 billion per year in the midterm, but with a cap increase. This sounds, against the backdrop of the first given outlook, a little conservative. Can you elaborate why you are not more optimistic or planning more aggressively?
I think you're right. The number is conservative. If you run the numbers, what you'll see is that the proceeds, the net proceeds on the capital raise, we could probably use a bit more leverage, and we are saying at least 1.5 billion of GDV. So to the extent that this number will be exceeded, and I think there's a good chance of us getting above the 1.5 billion, there's also upside to the revenue target. But the other thing that we're also achieving is that we are accelerating the growth, so the trajectory to achieving the 1.6 to 1.7 billion will be steeper compared to what we would have been able to do organically. And lastly, in line with the previous statements, we feel quite strongly that the opportunity is now. So putting money to work now should allow us to generate enhanced returns versus our ambitious targets, considering what Kruno has said about the market environment.
Okay, very clear. Thanks.
Thank you. Once again, if you'd like to join the queue, please press star one at this time. Our next question will come from Thomas Rothauser with Jefferies.
Hi, morning, everybody. Just one question, actually, on the sales activity. You said that's basically back to pre-COVID levels. I understand this is partly impacted by catch-up effects from a weak Q2. Can you comment on that, or is this right, the assumption, or actually what I'm interested in is if the underlying sales activity, if you adjust for catch-up effects, is also back at pre-COVID levels.
Thomas, yeah, the answer is yes. So the binding quality we have is back to level of pre-COVID, and we are currently in the pre-marketing phase of the one or the other project, and also here the binding quality of people signing reservations, and this is from our perspective one of the main statistics. How many reservations we are signing week by week is back to normal.
Mm.
Thomas, I think to be clear, we don't think that this is just a catch up of pent up demand. This is a fundamental return to previous levels in terms of sales speed and discussions, and we can see this internally not just by on the sales ratio basis. We also see this on the level of interaction and reservations that we monitor as well.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. Just one follow-up on the 2021 revenue guidance. Maybe we can get some more color on how visible is this and about confidence level on that.
So as usual, the starting point for our guidance is a bottom up analysis of the existing projects. As we said that you know all of our revenues are covered by existing projects. We're clearly subject to changes here and there. Some projects go faster, some go slower. I think we have a really very high level of confidence to achieving both the revenue target as well as the net income target for 2021. It would take another severe external shock for us to feel uncomfortable with that figure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Philip Kaiser with Warp Research.
Good morning, everyone. And just two questions. One referring to the overview on page 12. And you mentioned that there is this 50-50 split between value home and a current curve business. Is that referring to the 1.5 billion or to the 4.3 billion of total GDV? Were there any corona-related involvement cases in your network of subcontractors so that you have to replace new, so old partners or service providers, so there could be kind of a trouble in the construction area?
Okay, start with the first one. So the 50-50 split is related to the 4.3 billion. When we look at the near term, short term 1.2, thereof are approximately 700 million related to the core business and approximately 500 million to value home.
Mm-hmm.
And your second question regarding subcontractors, so we haven't had any impact by Corona. Or we haven't lost any capacities on the construction side, so we work with the full workforce. What helps us here is additionally that we are well organized on the construction sites with all the you know necessary infrastructure, and additionally we have already before Corona installed a system of identifying every worker on the site. So if there would be a Corona case, we could immediately react on the construction sites, identifying the work, etc. So here we are well prepared if something is coming up, but up to date, there was no impact.
Okay, thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thank you. Again, as a reminder, please press star 1 now if you would like to ask a question. We are now holding. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. I am currently showing no questions in the queue at this time. I'd now like to turn the call back over to Mr. Sabosky for closing remarks.
Yeah, thank you for your attention. If you have further questions, please do not hesitate to contact the IR team also after the call. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.